everyone. Welcome to episode number 10 of Thomas and the Bibli. Wrapping up a second week here. It's been fun so far. Hey, you know, that last episode was a little, got me a little down in the dumps. I was a little low energy from it. There wasn't that much there. I think I made some good points toward the end, but it was a little bit of a downer, a little boring kind of stuff. So I'm going to try to keep my energy up this time. First chapter is not doing me any favors here tonight. For me it's tonight. I don't know what it is for you guys. Could be any time in the distant future. So chapter 39, this becomes more of a story now. There's more, we're going on like one sort of coherent story here. Which is one of the reasons, to my understanding, that people are pretty sure this is sort of a made up sort of a literature. I'm not going to get too much into that. So this chapter, I have, one big point in the middle, but for the most part, I'll just try to get through and help you and make sure we all understand what's going on. And Joseph, you remember where we are from last week. Joseph, not last week, I'm just... Joseph was sold, if you remember, by his brethren, and they took his amazing Technicolor dream coat, which I think I called a dream suit in the beginning of the last podcast. No, it was funny. I had a good chuckle at that when I listened back to it. And Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was just standing next to him, just like, hey, I'm the Lord. And he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him. And he said, hey, how's it going? You're with this guy? Oh, okay. Yeah, Joseph was wearing one of those I'm with the Lord shirts, like with the arrow. Stupid. And that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight and served him. And he made him overseer over his house and all that he had put into his hand. So Joseph, just to keep the summary going, Joseph was sold to the Pharaoh, and the Pharaoh really liked him and saw that he did good work. So he was put in charge of the Pharaoh's house. And it came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught he had, save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well-favored. So basically it just says the Pharaoh let Joseph just do sort of whatever he wanted. Well, not whatever he wanted, but he let Joseph manage everything, and all the Pharaoh cared, you know, really even paid attention to was the fact that he was eating. That's all that bit meant. And it came to pass, after these things, that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, lie with me. But he refused, and said, I cannot tell a lie. No. And said unto his master's wife, behold, my master wotteth not, W-O-T-T-E-T-H, kind of a weird word, wotteth. Honestly, not really sure what it means. Wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? So here's where I'm going to stop. My big spiel for this one. So did you hear that? How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? It's really interesting. This is either the first time or just maybe the first time I've noticed them use the word sin. I don't think anyone said that before. I sort of wonder where Joseph even got this concept. If you were alive at this time, right when we're out here, when Joseph is turning down the Pharaoh's wife, what would you have so far to base your concept of what God wants on? What would you have? Let's just look at the evidence so far. So far, we've had a God that has made one proclamation. So as far as what God's actually told us to do, he's made one, which I keep repeating. I said a lot last time, which is not to kill anyone. So that's his one proclamation. And that doesn't really help us here. Doesn't really apply. What about God speaking through his actions? We've seen God murder everyone on earth except Noah, who we found out was a spiteful jerk who cursed Canaan for his father Ham doing absolutely nothing. So Noah's a total jerk, and God's endorsed that behavior, so that's one thing he's done. Oh, and just a quick side note. Everything we've read so far was written by Moses, who isn't even born yet at the point we're talking about. So it's probably unlikely that Joseph even knows about a lot of this stuff that has happened with God. You know, maybe it's come down through the family, I guess, but I don't know. There's a lot of different stuff going on here, and it's not evident from Joseph's life, from what we've heard so far, that he really knows any of this, but who knows? But we'll just give him the benefit of the doubt. We'll say he knows everything that's gone on. And to give his thought that I'm sort of criticizing here, to give it the most potential validity. So after that aside, looking more at our evidence here, God has explicitly endorsed polygamy in multiple cases. Most directly when he told Sarai to give her handmaiden to Abram. The Lord directly told Sarai to give her husband another wife. So that's a lesson we've learned. We've seen that he tests people's faith when he already knows what they're going to do. So I guess we can count that as one endorsement for pointless and emotionally scarring wastes of time. Also, we saw God explicitly reward Jacob for being a complete cheat in multiple cases. Jacob basically went around and cheated everybody he could. And God rewarded him for that. And then the other day, we were talking, just yesterday, whenever you listened to the last one, he murdered a young for doing nothing. Just said, sucked, and God killed him. That's about all it said. And then he murdered Onan, just flat out murdered him for spilling his semen. Didn't even give him like a warning, you know, like a, okay, next time don't do that. No, just killed him. Mm-hmm. So that's about, that's not absolutely all of it, but that's a good summary of the evidence we have so far. And here's Joseph making some kind of bald statement about what would be a sin against God. What Joseph should be doing, if he wants to be close to God, is marry more than one woman, cheat people left and right, make sure to kill anyone who drops their semen, someplace where it's not supposed to be. Also go around emotionally scarring people with pointless tests. And all the while he's doing that, he'll be also fulfilling another important quality of acting like a hateful douchebag like Noah. And then once he does that, he'll be doing basically everything God has endorsed so far. But no, he talks about sin against God if he has sex with the Pharaoh's wife. I'm not to say that he's wrong, that's wrong. I'm not saying that. Sounds pretty principled. But the point I'm making is that it's pretty clear that everyone already had a certain kind of morality around this time. You know, obviously not everyone had the exact same morals, but everyone we've dealt with has had a picture of morality basically established, where, as we've seen, it's totally normal to burn your daughter if she's a whore, kill stuff like that, you know, stuff that God has not even come close to addressing. They already have all that established, and when they invented this God, they sort of just fit him into that picture and just figured, like, oh yeah, he'll endorse that. If God's moral law was really eternal, wouldn't he have just come down now, actually at the very beginning, start with Adam and Eve or Noah or somebody way up there, and say, okay, I'm going to tell you guys so that you're not confused forever until, you know, way later in the 21st century, when people have a pretty, a much better moral handle on things, wouldn't he just, I'm going to lay down the law. Here's what you got to do. No slavery, no stoning or burning women, no discrimination, no killing people, no this and that. Everything that we've basically found out all throughout history has our morality sort of evolved to where we are now, and will most likely continue to evolve. If God were real, he would have just taken the answers to that little test, our morality, we've just gotten the answer key, the teacher's edition of the Book of Morals, and he would just rattle them off for us right in the beginning of time. Just been like, all right, this is, and it wouldn't just be 10 quick stupid commandments. And I can't wait to get to that because those commandments are horrible. I cheated. I've read ahead. No, I actually haven't really read ahead. I've just, everybody knows them. They're terrible. He wouldn't have done that. He would have been like, okay, here's some good guidelines, and also here's a lot of literature to refer to on little nuances within these guidelines. No, he didn't do that. So he's not real. He's just not. The Bible, even in the New Testament, endorses slavery the entire time. I think we can all be pretty certain that that's one moral proclamation, moral guideline that we're pretty sure about. I'm 97.2% sure that we shouldn't hold people as slaves. Am I crazy? So shouldn't the Bible have covered that at some point? All right, enough about this rant. So that's my rant for the day, More evidence that people already had morality before God here. And I don't think it was a good morality by any means. And I'm sure they had some things right, but it was already there. God didn't create morals. And it came to pass, as she spake to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business. And there was none of the men of the house here within. Was he going poo? He came to the house to do his business, and there's no one there. He's like, oh, thank God, there's no one here. Yep, all to myself. But no, Pharaoh's wife. And she caught him by his garment. I wonder what a garment is. Oh, I guess it's just a garment. It's not a euphemism for something else. Saying, lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand. Oh, ow. And fled, and got him out. And it came to pass, when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and was fled forth, that she called unto the men of her house and spake unto them, saying, see, he hath brought in an Hebrew unto us to mock us. He came in unto me to lie with me, and I cried with a loud voice. And it came to pass, when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled and got him out. And she laid up his garment by her until his lord came home. And she spake unto him according to these words, saying, the Hebrew servant which thou hast brought unto me, unto us, came in unto me to mock me. It's a weird way of mocking someone. Oh, getting a fuzzy thing, I think. Yeah, every time. Never fails. And it came to pass, as I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled out. So basically what's happened so far is Joseph refused the Pharaoh's wife's advances. She eventually got a little pissed off at this, and so decided to sort of frame Joseph, say, he raped me. And so the Pharaoh just got home, and she told the Pharaoh this lie. And it came to pass, when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spake unto him, saying, after this manner did thy servant to me, that his wrath was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him in the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound. And he was there in the prison. It's a really redundant little paragraph there. But the Lord was with Joseph, and shewed him mercy, and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison. And whatsoever they did, therefore, there he was the doer of it. That's not very good prison keeper practice. Say like, all right, prisoner, I'm out of here for the night. Got a date. I'm trusting you to guard yourself and all these other prisoners. So just make sure you guys don't go anywhere. Stay put. If you want, you can, you know, you can beat yourselves or do something, you know, do whatever I would do while I'm gone. And hey, I'll catch you later. Have a good one. Pretty bad prison guard. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand. Looked not to anything. He was, all right, I don't have to pay attention to anything. I got Joseph here. Because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. Uh-oh, you know where this is going. I hope the prison keeper doesn't have a loose wife as well. That sounds like the next thing. And then the prison keeper's going to throw him into another prison, and so on. All right, that's the end of the first chapter. Now let's go on to chapter 40. This here is a long one, gotta say. So let's get into it. It came to pass after these things that the butler of the king of Egypt and his baker had offended their lord, the king of Egypt. Uh-oh, you know what that means. It sounds like after Joseph was in prison that the Pharaoh's wife went after the butler and the baker. What else could a butler and a baker have done that would be so bad? Like one buttled improperly and one baked improperly, you know, like. Anyway, I think the wife's going after everybody, the rest of the servants. Pharaoh's a busy guy, you know, he's out pharaohing, you know, whatever they do. And Pharaoh was wroth against the two of his officers, against the chief of the butlers, and against the chief of the bakers, and against the chief of the candlestick makers. And he put them in ward in the house of the captain of the guard into the prison, the place where Joseph was bound. Oh, so Joseph's been bound this whole time. And he's been in charge of the prison? Wow. That's kind of funny. Funny image. And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and he served them. And they continued a season in ward. You know, I think I put my finger on this. First of all, I just thought, and they continued a season in ward to me. The first thing I thought of is like a theater. They continued their, you know, their season in the ward, you know, their the plays they perform. But, you know, I put my finger on something else. I don't mean any offense to anyone when I say this, but I'm pretty sure Joseph is somewhat mentally handicapped. It all fits. Think about it. The fact in the two chapters ago or three chapters ago when he was stupid enough to tell his brethren not one, but two dreams where he was ruling over them? How clueless can you be? That's not the kind of thing you tell people. Any sane person would have just sort of kept that one a little closer to the vest, you know, like, oh, okay, I'll file that away. Maybe it'll come true, but I'm not going to go around telling people about it. And then here, there's this prison guard doing what sounds to me like a really patronizing thing, you know, like the kid you make team manager, you know, for like the football team. And I'm really not trying to be offensive, but I sort of think that that's what it's about. It sounds to me like this prison keeper did this sort of patronizing thing. Like it's one of those like, okay, Joseph, hey, buddy, why don't you make sure these two prisoners don't escape, okay? Okay, man. All right, thanks. You take care of that for me. You know, it really sounds like that. Why would you put a prisoner who's bound in charge of a prison? It's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. So, really, I'm fairly serious about this. I think there's something sort of wrong with Joseph, and that's the situation. All right, moving on. So, and they dreamed a dream. Oh, I'm going to do it again. They dreamed a dream. Okay, last one, I promise. Both of them, each man in his dream in one night, each man according to the interpretation of his dream, the butler and the baker and the candlestick maker of Egypt, of the king of Egypt, which were bound in the prison. And Joseph came in unto them in the morning. Whoa, heyo. There's my favorite phrase again. Wait a minute. Joseph came in unto them in the morning? I thought that that phrase was just reserved for, you know, special occasions. What what does it mean in this case? In the morning, first thing in the morning, Joseph's like, hey, how you doing? Oh, came in under you, whoops. You know, it's a prison. That sort of thing happens. Why'd they have to include that in the book? It's a dirty book. And he asked the Pharaoh's officers that were with, came in unto them, sorry, I didn't finish that, came in unto them in the morning, and then had a cigarette, and looked upon them, and behold, they were sad. Well, he just came in unto them. Of course they're going to be sad. I'd be sad too. And he asked Pharaoh's officers that were with him in the ward of his lord's house, saying, wherefore look ye so sadly today? Come on, we're in prison. You're supposed to be happy. Oh, I know. They're in a prison. Oh, hey, buddy. Hey, how you doing? Yeah, you look a little down. Yeah, do you see these manacles? Like, I'm chained to some bars here. Like, am I supposed... Okay, sorry, I'll smile more. I'll make sure to work on that. Again, mentally challenged. I really think so. But I guess they're humoring him. And they said unto him, we have dreamed a dream. Nope, not going to do it. We have dreamed a dream, and there is no interpreter of it. Dreamed a dream, and there's no interpreter of it. So what happens normally? They dream these stupid dreams, and then someone's there to interpret them? I mean, how do they know that this is some sort of special dream? And Joseph said unto them, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me them, I pray you. So he thinks he's God, pretty much. And the chief butler told his dream to Joseph and said to him, in my dream... Behold, a vine was before me, and in the vine there were three branches, and it was as though it budded, and her blossoms shot forth, and the clusters thereof brought forth ripe grapes. And the Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes, and I pressed them into Pharaoh's cup, and I gave the cup unto Pharaoh's hand. And Joseph said unto him, ah, this is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thine head and restore thee unto thy place, and thou shalt deliver Pharaoh's cup into his hand after the former manner when thou wast his butler. Yeah, that's nice. But think on me when it shall be well with thee, and shew kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house. For indeed I was stolen away out of the land of the Hebrews. And here also have I done nothing that they should put me in the dungeon. Okay, so I haven't recapped in a while. I hope you guys have been following. Sometimes I think the jokes I make sort of recap it enough. But anyway, pretty much the baker and the butler and the candlestick maker. Not the candlestick maker. I'm making that part up. Those two guys sent in prison. They have dreams. Joseph, they're sad in prison. They're sad because no one can interpret their dreams. Because that's their biggest concern when you're sitting in prison. Oh, man. I don't care that I'm in prison right now, but... Oh, I had this dream. Anyway. So Joseph says, here, I'm God. I'll interpret that. And the first one tells him his dream, and he says that means you're going to be freed soon. Okay, and so the next one. And then he says, so when you're out... Joseph says, when you're out, remember me and try to get me out of here, okay? And when the chief baker saw that the interpretation was good, the baker's the other guy, and how the hell did he know the interpretation was good? Nothing's happened yet. It could be total crap until we see what happens. Kind of weird. Joseph, I also was in my dream, and behold, I had 3 white baskets on my head. And in the uppermost basket... there was all manner of baked meats for Pharaoh, and the birds did eat of them out of the basket upon my head. And Joseph answered and said, this is the interpretation thereof. The 3 baskets are 3 days. And then the baker said, oh, yeah, no, I get 3 days. Okay, so then in 3 days, the Pharaoh's going to let me go. Awesome. Ha, thanks, man. Wow, that's awesome. Joseph says, well, no, not exactly. They're 3 days. Yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thy head from off thee, and shall hang thee on a tree, and the birds shall eat thy flesh from off thee. And it came to pass... And the baker probably said at this point, how was my dream that much different than the butler's dream? You know, so he was feeding the Pharaoh grape juice. I'm letting birds eat baked meats for the Pharaoh out of a basket on my head. Come on. It's essentially the same thing. How come he's going free and I'm getting hanged? That's a load of bull crap. Joseph says, no. Sorry, that's what it means. Baker says. Well, you didn't let me finish. See, this was just some crap dream I had, but then I had this real dream after that where I was feeding... you know, tries to get out of it. And it came to pass the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made... here's his birthday. You know, he'd be like 20,000. No, not really. He'd be 2,800 and... Let's remember his birthday. That he made a feast unto all his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief butler and of the chief baker among his servants, and he restored the chief butler unto his butlership again, and he gave the cup unto Pharaoh's hand, just like Joseph said, all that stuff, good stuff happened. But he hanged the chief baker, as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgot him. Wow, what the hell did the baker do that was so bad, I wonder? So he restored the butler. He's like, all right, you know, here you go. But no, he hanged the chief baker, just like Joseph said. Well, I hope I never have a dream like that. All right, moving on to chapter 41. And it came to pass, every single chapter starts this way. Why didn't they find some different way? We're not even, let's see, that will be two... If I'm doing it in a year, 52 weeks, we're in the end of the second week. So we're 1/26th of the way done after this. And I'm already getting sick of how they start every chapter. We got 25 more 26ths of this to go, I bet. Although maybe Psalms won't start, and it came to pass every time. Who knows, though. And it came to pass at the end of two full years that Pharaoh dreamed, and behold, he stood by the river. And behold, there came out of the river seven well-favored kine, and fat-fleshed, and they fed in a meadow. And behold, seven other kine came up after them out of the river, ill-favored and lean-fleshed, and stood by the other kine upon the brink of the river. And the ill-favored and lean-fleshed kine did eat up the seven well-favored and fat kine. So Pharaoh awoke. And he slept and dreamed the second time, and behold, seven ears of corn came upon one stalk, rank and good. And behold, seven thin ears and blasted with the east wind sprung up after them. And the seven thin ears devoured the seven rank and full ears. And Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. And it came to pass that in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt, and all the wise men thereof, and Pharaoh told them his dream, but there was none that could interpret them unto the Pharaoh. How does everyone know which of these dreams is significant and which isn't? Wouldn't these just blend in? If this were you, wouldn't it just blend in with every other weird dream you had, like, every night? You know, like, I have a lot of dreams where I feel a little uneasy. You know what becomes of them? Nothing! Nothing becomes of them. I go on with my day. I maybe feel a little weird for that day, but nothing becomes of it. Yet they always know in this book. They always know when they have a dream. You know, even that dream where the butler who just got fired had a dream he was serving the Pharaoh again. Well, yeah, of course you would. That was your job. All right, I'll move on. Okay, but there's none that could interpret the dream. Oh, so basically, if you haven't followed along, Pharaoh had a dream. He called all the magicians in his land, but no one could tell him what it meant. So I bet you can guess what's going to happen next. The chief butler spoke unto the... Then spake the chief butler unto the Pharaoh, saying, I do remember my faults this day. Meaning he remembers what he had forgotten all this time, because he was supposed to remind the Pharaoh. Pharaoh was wroth with his servants, and put me in a ward in the captain of the guard's house, both me and the chief baker. Remember that guy you hanged from a tree for no reason? Yeah, him. Yeah, good guy. And we dreamed a dream. That didn't count. And we dreamed a dream in one night, I and he. We dreamed each man according to the interpretation of his dream. And there was with us a young man, an Hebrew, servant to the captain of the guard. And we told him, and he interpreted to us our dreams. To each man according to his dream did he interpret. And it came to pass, as he interpreted to us, so it was. Me he restored unto mine office, and him he hanged. Remember? And the Pharaoh sent and called Joseph. So basically, the butlers just remembered to the Pharaoh, oh yeah, there was this guy who was really good interpreting dreams. And so the Pharaoh sent and called Joseph. And they brought him hastily out of the dungeon, and he shaved himself and changed his raiment and came in unto the Pharaoh. That's first mistake right there. When the Pharaoh calls for you to see him, it was good that he shaved, good that he changed his clothes, but he made the crucial mistake of coming in unto the Pharaoh. Yeah, Pharaoh doesn't like that. Oh well. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it. And I have heard say of thee that thou canst understand a dream to interpret it. And Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, it's not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. Mm-hmm. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, in my dream, behold, I stood upon the bank of the river. And behold, so he's recounting his dream. This is a long chapter. I'm going to skip. He just says word for word what the dream was, the corn and the ill-favored kine. So I awoke, he says, after he described the dreams. And I saw in my dream, and behold, now this is the second dream. Sorry, now he's recounting the second dream. And so he's done. And then he says, no one could interpret this dream. Going back to the text now. And Joseph said unto Pharaoh, the dream of Pharaoh is one. God hath shewed Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good kine are 7 years, and the seven good ears are 7 years. The dream is one, and the seven thin and ill-favored kine that came up after them are 7 years, and the seven empty ears blasted with the east wind shall be 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I have spoken unto Pharaoh. What God is about to do, he sheweth unto the Pharaoh. Unto Pharaoh. Behold, there come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt, and there shall rise after them 7 years of famine. And all the plenty shall be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine shall consume the land. And the plenty shall not be known in the land by reason of that famine following, for it shall be very grievous. And for that the dream was doubled unto Pharaoh twice. It is because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. So, Joseph has interpreted his dream. And it basically means that they're going to have 7 great years followed by 7 horrible years, and that's it. Now, therefore, let Pharaoh look out a man discreet and wise. So Joseph's giving him advice here. He says, let Pharaoh look out a man discreet and wise and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this and let him appoint officers over the land and take up the 5th part of the land of Egypt in the 7 plenteous years. And let them gather all the food of those good years that come, and lay up corn under the hand of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities. And that food shall be for store to the land against the 7 years of famine, which shall be in the land of Egypt, that the land perish not through the famine. And the thing was good in the eyes of the Pharaoh, and in the eyes of all his servants. And Pharaoh said unto his servants, can we find such a one as this, a man in whom the Spirit of God is? Joseph's looking, looking away, like, trying to look all, regal and but nonchalantly, like, oh yeah, no, I don't know who that's gonna be. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, for as much as God hath shewed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Played right into his hand. Thou shalt be over my house, and according unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than you. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, see, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand and put it upon Joseph's hand, and arrayed him in vestures of fine linen, and put a gold chain about his neck. And he made him to ride in the 2nd chariot which he had. And they cried before him, bow the knee. And he made him ruler over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I am Pharaoh. And without thee shall no man lift up his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paneah, and gave him to wife Asenath, the daughter of Potiphar, a priest of On. And Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt. Wow. So the Pharaoh just trusted that Joseph was right before any of this actually panned out. And he didn't just say like, okay, well, I'll sort of believe you, but I'll, you know, I'll see what happens. We'll see what, I'll do what you say just in case, but we'll see what happens. No, he didn't do that. He gives him, he basically makes him king of all the land, gives him a wife, lets him ride in his second chariot. It's just sort of, just a little hasty, I would think. I would think a pharaoh that was that sort of impulsive would be a pretty crappy pharaoh. Maybe I should run for pharaoh. I think so. And Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt. And in the 7 plenteous years, the earth brought forth by handfuls. And he gathered up all the food of the 7 years, which were in the land of Egypt, and laid food in the cities. The food of the field, which was round about every city, laid he up in the same. And Joseph gathered corn as the sand of the sea, very much until he left numbering, for it was without number. So it was as much as the seed that Abraham and Jacob and everyone was promised. That's how much corn they had. That's a lot. And unto Joseph were born 2 sons before the years of famine came, which Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bare unto him. And Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for God, he said, hath made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. And the name of the second called he Ephraim, for God hath caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. And in the 7 years of plenteousness that was in the land of Egypt were ended, and the 7 years of dearth began to come, according as Joseph had said. And the dearth was in all lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. And when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. And Pharaoh said unto all the Egyptians, go unto Joseph, what he saith to do, you do. So, but that was back before they had Twitter. So I bet it was kind of hard for Pharaoh. So basically what it's saying here is everything he said happened, and now nobody has any food. And all of Egypt comes to Pharaoh. Like I said, before you had Twitter, I bet the Pharaoh had a hell of a time telling everyone to go talk to Joseph. It's probably like, your highness, your pharaohness, there's someone here to see you. Send him in. Oh, your pharaohness, I'm starved. There's a famine out there. I need bread. No, okay. Go talk to Joseph. He's got all the bread. Next. Sir, I'm starved. I've got no food. Oh, yeah, okay. No, this is a common thing. Just go talk to Joseph. He's got all the food, you know. 2 days later, he's just dealing with, it's like, oh man, I gotta find a better way. Okay, everyone, all of Egypt, I'm just gonna yell really loudly, everyone, go talk to Joseph if you're lacking food. I have none, but Joseph's got it all, thank you. And then, you know, that has to just quickly spread throughout all of Egypt. Pain in the butt that was. And the famine was over all the face of the earth. Wow, in the entire earth? This famine was, you know, it just goes to show the solipsism back then. Oh, that's a great word, by the way. I'm not just trying to be sound smart. Oh, who am I kidding? Yes, I am. But solipsism means, which you probably all know, and you're thinking I'm an idiot for thinking that you don't know. But solipsism means basically just thinking that your world or your life is the only life. I ran into it from the problem of consciousness and philosophy, where you can't really prove that other people have consciousness, but the view that they don't and that you're the only one who does is called solipsism. I think it's used in a lot of different cases. But anyway, isn't this a great example of that? Because there's a famine in Egypt, naturally there's a famine in the entire earth. Because drought affects the whole earth. It doesn't just affect one area. Yeah. That's what that's proof that whoever wrote this book just didn't understand anything. It was made by people, not God. Anyway, and Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold unto the Egyptians, and the famine waxed sore in the land of Egypt, and all countries came into Egypt to Joseph for to buy corn, because all that famine was so sore in all lands. Really, so people came from Asia, Iceland, Canada, came from all countries to get some corn. Oh, could it be that she just didn't know about some of those other countries? Could that be it? No? Okay. On to chapter 42. Now when Jacob saw that there was corn in Egypt, Jacob said unto his sons, "Why ye look up one upon another?" And he said, "Behold, I have heard that there is corn in Egypt. Get you down thither and buy for us from thence, that we may live and not die." Because that's not redundant. And Joseph's 10 brethren went down to buy corn in Egypt. But Benjamin, Joseph's brother, Jacob sent not with his brethren, for he said, lest peradventure mischief befall him. So we're back to Jacob, Joseph's father. Jacob sending all his brethren down to get corn. But Jacob says Benjamin is not supposed to go because Benjamin is Joseph's brother. And he'll get into trouble or something. And the sons of Israel came to buy corn among those that came, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. So interesting. People from the land of Canaan are heading down to Egypt for food. Because that makes sense. It sounds a little counterintuitive to me. Like, hey, there's a huge famine. Oh, I'm so hungry. Yeah, what do we do? Maybe we should go, let's go up north where things aren't so freaking horrible. No. I think we should, let's head toward all that sand and, you know, those weird giant cat sculpture things. Let's go down there. There's gotta be food there, right? I mean, there's sand. Where there's sand, there's food. Yeah, so let's head there about 300 miles. Alright. Yeah. Doesn't make too much sense to me. And Joseph was the governor over the land, and he it was that sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brethren came and bowed down themselves before him with their faces to the earth. And Joseph saw his brethren, and he knew them, but made himself strange unto them, and spake roughly unto them, and said unto them, "Whence come ye?" And they thought, "Wow, how roughly he speaks to us." And they said, "From the land of Canaan to buy food." And Joseph knew his brethren, but they knew him not. So all his brethren are coming to buy food from him, and he recognizes them, but they don't recognize him. And with that cunning accent I just used, they didn't recognize his voice. And Joseph remembered the dreams which he had dreamed of them, and said unto them, "Ye are spies. To see the nakedness of the land are ye came." And they said unto him, "Nay, my lord, but to buy food are thy servants come." That's all that we want to do. We just want to buy some food, they're saying. We're not spies. "We are all one man's sons. We are true men. Thy servants are no spies." And he said unto them, "Nay, but to see the nakedness of the land ye are come." And they probably thought to themselves, "Is this guy some sort of idiot? What exactly would we be spying on? Like, I see a key bit of sand over there." They're probably thinking, like, why would he think we were coming to spy by asking him for corn? Is that a good, like, spy technique, you know? Always go when you're spying and ask the government official for corn? Yeah. That doesn't even make sense. So, again, I'm thinking he's a little dim-witted. And I think they're thinking that, too. And they said, "Thy servants are 12 brethren, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is this day with our father, and one is not." That they're talking about Joseph, actually, and one is not means... So we're 12 brothers, one's back home and one's dead. And Joseph said unto them, "That is it that I spake unto you, saying, ye are spies. Hereby ye shall be proved. By the life of Pharaoh ye shall not go forth hence, except your youngest brother come hither. Send one of you, and let him fetch your brother, and ye shall be kept in prison, that your words may be proved, whether there be any truth in you, or else by the life of Pharaoh, surely ye are spies." And he put them all together into ward 3 days. And Joseph said unto them on the third day, "This do and live, for I fear God. If ye be true men, let one of your brethren be bound in the house of your prison. Go ye, carry corn for the famine of your houses. But bring your youngest brother unto me, so shall your words be verified, and ye shall not die. And they did so. So he puts him in prison for 3 days, just for fun. And then he says, you need to prove your story, so go get your younger brother and bring him back here. Again, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And they said to one another, we are very verily guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the anguish of his soul when he besought us, and we would not hear. Therefore is this distress come upon us. And Reuben answered them, saying, spake I not unto you, saying, do not sin against the child, and ye would not hear? Therefore, behold, also his blood is required. So basically they decide to say, man, this guy's being such a jerk to us because we mistreated Joseph. Because that's the only reason. And Reuben says, yeah, I told you not to do that, but you wouldn't hear me. And they knew not that Joseph understood them, for he spake unto them by an interpreter. So, interesting, so Joseph's overhearing all that. And he turned himself about from them and wept, and returned to them again and communed with them, and took them from Simeon and bound him before their eyes. Oh, so he takes Simeon and ties him up and keeps him there. Then Joseph commanded to fill their sacks with corn and to restore every man's money into his sack and to give them provision for the way, and thus did he unto them. And they laded their asses with the corn and departed thence, and as one of them opened his sack to give his ass... trying to be mature. One of them opened his sack to give his ass provender in the inn. man. Well, at least they're doing it in an inn, you know. They're not doing it in an out. And he espied his money, for behold, it was in his sack's mouth. Oh, it's hard. Okay, I'm trying. And he said unto his brethren, my money is restored, and lo, it is even in my sack. And their heart failed them. And they were afraid, saying one to another, what is this that God hath done unto us? So they think God's trying to spite them by putting their money back in their sack. And they came unto Jacob their father, unto the land of Canaan, and told him all that befell them unto them, saying, the man who is the lord of the land spake roughly to us, and took us for spies of the country. And we said unto him, we are true men, we are no spies. We be 12 brethren, sons of our father, one is not, and the youngest is this day with our father in the land of Canaan. They're just recapping what happened. And the man, the lord of the country, said unto us, hereby shall I know that ye are true men. Leave one of your brethren here with me, and take food for the famine of your households, and be gone. And bring your youngest brother unto me. Then shall I know that ye are no spies, but that ye are true men. So I will deliver you your brother, and ye shall traffic in the land. How would that prove anything if they came back with some guy and said he was their younger brother? Would that prove that they're not spies? It's not a very well thought out plan, methinks. And it came to pass, as they emptied their sacks, that behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when both they and their father saw the bundles of money, they were afraid. And Jacob their father said unto them, me have ye bereaved of my children. Joseph is not, and Simeon is not. And ye will take Benjamin away. All these things are against me. So Jacob the father is saying, oh, you've taken all my children. Now they're all going to be dead. And Reuben spake unto his father, saying, slay my two sons, if I bring him not to thee. Deliver him into my hand, and I will bring him to thee again. Yeah, because that'll make it better. So Jacob doesn't want to give up his son. And Reuben says, look, this will be fine. If I don't bring him back, you can kill my two sons. Oh, okay, fair enough. And he said, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he is left alone. If mischief befell him by the way which ye go, then ye shall bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to the grave. So actually Jacob refuses. He said, no. He says, no, you're not bringing him. And actually that's the end of the chapter, and that's the end of today's podcast. So, as usual, send comments to comments@thomasinthebible.com. I need more death threats. I haven't had enough. I'm worried. I feel uneasy about it. I might not be doing a good job if no one's giving me death threats. So that's it. And we're on. Have a good weekend. And if you're listening to this way later and you don't have a weekend coming up, then you know what? Screw you, okay? Yeah. Oh, I said it. I went there. All right. Have a good one.